Chapter 34. As Jesse drove along the Concord Turnpike, his thoughts drifted back to earlier in the day. He didn't know how to feel about what had gone down in New York. He'd had to tell Hale Hunsicker. The man had a right to know Jen was in danger. And if Jesse wanted to protect Jen, he needed Hunsicker's help. But now he wasn't so sure he'd made the right move. Jesse didn't usually second-guess his decisions, but this wasn't usually. By his telling Hunsicker, things had suddenly gotten exponentially more complicated. He had ceded that much more control of the situation, whatever little real control he had of it to begin with. Jesse remembered something he'd heard a long time ago. So long ago that he'd forgotten who'd said it, yet the words stuck in his head. There's no such thing as a secret when more than one person knows it. Telling Hunsicker wasn't like telling most people. People with money are trouble because money gives people power and a sense of entitlement. They also think having money means they're smarter than everyone else in the room, that they always know better even when there's no evidence to support that belief. And most people can't afford or don't need a head of security. As unsure as he was about giving Hunsicker a heads up, he was even less sure of Kahan. Jesse disdained arrogance. Arrogance was the emotional equivalent of wealth. It gave you a false sense of superiority, a sense of invincibility. Jesse had seen it as a ball player. He played with guys who thought great talent made them invulnerable. But as Kahan himself had said, no one was invulnerable. He didn't need Kahan to tell him that. The aching in his wrecked right shoulder reminded him of that lesson every day of his life. For all of his worries about loss of control, Jesse was now about to cede more of it by letting someone else in on the secret. He clicked his turn signal and pulled into the bowling alley's lot. There were only a few other cars in the lot, but the one he was looking for was there. Like its owner, it was expensively appointed, perfectly detailed, and painted a vaguely threatening flat black. Getting out of his Explorer, Jesse noticed it was cooler here than it had been in New York. Then he turned and went inside. Bowling alleys were mournful when they were silent, but he wasn't here to bowl or play candlepin. He was here to see Vinnie Morris. Jesse had needed to get Healy on board and to alert Hunsicker before telling Vinnie. Strangely, it was Morris he trusted most of all not to do anything to screw things up. Vinnie was a lot of things, a cool customer above all else, not a man given to acting on his first impulse. Unlike those of Healy, Hunsicker, or Kahan, Morris's loyalties weren't divided. He was deadly, a shark, but a thinking man's shark. Jesse stopped at the counter and asked for Morris. The fat guy behind the counter was wearing a Red Sox jersey that fit him a few lifetimes ago. The top of his head featured lots of skin and a few lonely gray hairs. He was too busy reading the Globe to look up from the paper. "Fresh out of Vinnie's here," the fat man said, looking up, his eyelids as droopy as his belly. "You want bowling shoes? We got plenty of them. Vinnie's we ain't got." Jesse wasn't in the mood and stuck his shield in front of the guy's face. He was unimpressed. "Paradise, huh? Where's that at? I've been searching for it my whole stinking life." "Get on the phone and tell Vinnie Morris Jesse Stone is here to see him. And don't say there's no Vinnie here."
"There's no Vinnie here."
Jesse grabbed a handful of the fat man's jersey and yanked his head down onto the counter so that his fleshy left cheek spread out across the sports pages.
"Last chance," Jesse said. "Stone, Stone, take it easy," Vinnie Morris called out from behind him. "The man's only doing his job."
Jesse let the man go and smoothed out the top of his Sox jersey. "Sorry." Fat man shrugged and made a face, jerking up one corner of his mouth. He went back to the paper.
"What is it, Stone?" Morris asked.
"Can we talk, alone?" Jesse said, pointing at the two big men flanking Morris. Morris jerked his head and his bookends stepped back.
"This way," he said to Jesse, pointing toward the game room.
The game room was fairly dark, but for all the colored lights on the row of unused pinball machines. Every few seconds, one of the pinball machines would flash, bells would ring. Vinny stopped by the air hockey table, wiped an area along one of its rails with a handkerchief, and then sat back against the table.
So, you got my attention, Stone.
You were right about Gino, but you were wrong, too.
I already have enough headaches, and I don't like riddles.
Gino didn't kill the boy, but he did kill himself. Vinny shook his head.
Then it don't figure.
It does, if Gino was saving himself from a long and painful death.
Like I said, Stone, I don't like riddles.
It was Peepers.
Fuck.
Vinny Morris didn't usually show emotion, and Jesse had never seen Morris afraid. Not until that moment.
You sure?
Jesse nodded.
I told Gino not to do that thing for you. So what are you going to do to make it right?
That's why I'm here, Vinny, Jesse said, to try and make it right.